Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
I'm Kim Reynolds of Dogman.com with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund. We are day 7, winter football practice is what it seemed like out there today. For those in Seattle, it is quite cold. I mean, it's probably mid-30s out at practice today right
now.
It
said 45.
Yeah, I'm not buying that for a minute. It was freaking cold out there. But, you know, when you're down on the lake close to the water, it always seems a little bit colder. My temperature gauge on my car said 36 on the way in.
Yeah, but Kim, think about it. It wasn't really blowing that hard either.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the wind that it was on Monday. So if you would have added the Monday wind to today, it could have gotten quite chilly.
So the good part about being freaking cold out there is there's no wind and there was no rain.
And the other thing, too, is that I know the people down in Portland and southern Washington are have dealt with snow the last few days.
Yeah.
No snow here, but it feels like it was just right on the cusp.
Yeah, this is November weather out there.
Feels like today. which makes the one day of when it was 70 last week even weirder.
When you were over at Central, you know, and you'd get down into the low 30s, was practice any different, Scott?
Well, I mean, we were usually done before the really bad weather hit and cold weather hit. I mean, it was in the 30s, though, so yeah, it was chilly out there. You definitely, especially when we were in the playoffs, because NAIA back then had playoffs. And so we were practicing into late November, and it was getting a little chilly.
Oh, yeah, any fan of college football who, especially in this area, who also watches FCS and has seen the playoff games
at the
Inferno or games over Montana, things like that. I mean, playing in snow or playing in a field that has had the snow removed from it, so you see the snow rounding the field. That's a pretty common occurrence, but you don't expect to see that kind of stuff in April in Seattle.
Those Sioux Fall guys brought it with them.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
DeBoer.
DeBoer has certainly talked about how it feels a lot more like Sioux Falls than it does Fresno.
And the Indiana guys, Nick Sheridan and Coach Shepard.
Guys on the offensive line, it looks like we had a little bit of flip-flopping around out there, Scott.
Yeah, it was a little bit different today. Chris noted, and I didn't see this, but it makes sense. Chris noted that Mateo Mele was getting some reps at
center. Yeah.
And then we saw Roger Rosengarten start out at right tackle.
For what? One play?
Two or three plays. But he false starts. And then Mateo Mele comes in or switches that back out.
Yeah, but tell everyone what he had to do.
He had to go touch the sign that says TNT, and we've been wondering about that because there's a lot of different adjectives, I guess, that would be out there.
Acronyms,
whatever. Yeah. But what I mean is there's a bunch of words in the TNT.
Oh, right.
Enthusiasm and be early and things like that.
Yeah.
And apparently that sign means takes no talent. TNT, takes no talent. And it's basically, you don't have to take talent. It doesn't take talent to false start.
Right.
It does to not false start. It doesn't take talent to be here early. It doesn't take talent to have enthusiasm.
Right.
You just have to have that anyway.
So my early hypothesis about TNT being a part of the explosive offense, you can scrap that.
I just thought it was an ode to AC/DC.
Yeah, so. Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you kind of surprised that Mateo Mele actually started a game at center?
Yes, was when Nick Harris got hurt.
It was three years ago.
Yeah,
I haven't seen him at center since, though.
It's 2019. Yeah, he hasn't done
it much. But remember, Scott Huff, I mean, he's been around, and he's seen him play at center, and he's gotten him prepared to play center.
They were pretty happy with what he did at center, too. So.
Well, and it's interesting because really, up to this point, it's only been Corey Luciano and Garen Hatchett. And so we really haven't, unless, you know, if you go into the threes, I think Will Pliska has gotten some reps at times from there, but which was the exact same as it was last year.
But having Mele at center makes all the sense in the world.
Well, why?
Over Luciano?
Well, no, it makes sense in this in the sense that you need multiple players to be able to staff the ball. I mean, I remember Scott Huff telling me that, you know, at any point in time, you've got to have at least 4 to 5 guys that can snap the ball at any one point, depending on what happens. I don't know if you remember this, Kim. Years and years and years ago, when USC came up here, they lost centers on back-to-back plays. I think this is when Chris O'Dowd was their starting center. They lost centers on back-to-back plays. Now, that's obviously an extreme example, but that's what you have to prepare for in these worst-case scenarios when it's the next man up.
Well, and you talk about, I think it was the Alamo Bowl with TCU and Oregon. Remember, Oregon's up like 35-7. Their center gets hurt.
Right.
And then they can't get a snap back to the quarterback.
That wasn't, was that Grassu? And,
yeah, Grassu was the one who got hurt. Yeah. And they can't get the snaps back on time, and TCU comes back and wins because the offense can't do anything. So, yeah, you need that center. But I don't. I guess I'm just wondering why it makes a lot of sense. Is it because he's done it before?
He played there. I thought he played pretty well when he played there. And he did. You know, with all the other offensive line spots, I like Mele as a player better than Luciano. I think he's more talented. So you know, get the most talented 5 guys out there.
Yeah.
He's done it before.
He has. So, well, you know, we'll see. I think Luciano's still probably your starting center against Kansas.
Well, it's
Kansas
also
State,
interesting, too, because of this concept, this TNT that we've been made aware of. You know, when you look at Corey Luciano's history at Washington, when he's been brought in as extra lineman, for instance, when he first came in and in goal line situations, remember the one where he false started at the goal line against Cal in the interminably long game that went into, like, 2 in the morning? That play may have cost them the game. It was his false start that forced them into a field goal instead of going for the touchdown. And so, when you've got to have a guy there that's mentally sharp and on it all the time. And so it's not surprising to me that they're still searching to make sure that they've got that right guy in there. Mm-hmm. And when you have 3 guys now that have legitimate experience, whether you're talking about, you know, and I'm talking about, when I say legitimate experience, I'm talking about multiple turns, you know, in spring and fall camp, as well as, in the case of Mele, an actual start on the road at Arizona. These are situations that you've got to gear those guys up for as many times as they can, because you never know what the circumstance is going to be. And at some point, they may have to rely on a guy like Mateo Mele to come in and be that guy. I just don't think they're grooming him to be the number one guy.
With Rosengarten over at right tackle, you know, surprising a little bit. Do you think that might have to do with left-handed quarterback, or what do you think?
No, he's been playing right tackle with the twos all spring long so far.
Because Mele was playing.
And since Mele had moved inside, I'm guessing that's why he was out there. But, yeah. I mean, it could have just been because I saw Luciano come out of the tent. So it could have just been Luciano had to get something looked at real quick, and that's why Mele was in there. But it was the first change that we had seen.
It does add credence to me to believe that Mele could very well be the emergency guy if they have to go in there, because he has experience doing it. Mm-hmm. But all things being equal, he's not one of the best 5 that I think that they believe could be out there when you talk about those number ones, because that would be counter to everything that we've seen in the first 6 practices.
Early on in practice, Sam Heward running with the ones. Beautiful long touchdown pass to Jalen McMillan.
Yeah, threw it right. He beats Elijah Jackson.
Yeah, I don't know if it ends up being a touchdown, but...
Well, at the very least, he would have been tackled inside the 5.
Right,
but
I agree.
Because...
But it wasn't, let's put it this way, the picture that we're painting, this is not one of those bombs over the top.
No, this is, I don't want to even call it a crossing route, but we can't really describe what
it was. But he caught it in stride down the field.
He caught it in stride coming across,
and
then bolted up the sidelines and outran everybody. But Covington, he was tackling him. He touched him around the, like, 2 or 3 yard line.
Yeah.
And if he had been trying to tackle him, maybe he pushes him out. I don't know, but I called it a touchdown because that looks better.
Well, thrown ball, probably about 30 yards in the air.
Yeah, probably something like that. Yeah.
I just wondered because the other receiver that was in the route seemed to be awfully close, and he
was
brought the other defender with him.
Is that Rome?
It may have been. I didn't actually keep track, but.
People have no idea how hard it is to keep track of all these
numbers. Well, I'm trying to keep track of the people that are making the play, not the ones that are kind of tangential to it. But what I did understand at the time was it looked like the other receiver had brought in the defender. It was a little too close for comfort. Because usually you want that other guy clearing out so that, you know, the one that makes the catch is in a one-on-one situation. And that really wasn't the case. There were four guys in a pretty tight space when McMillan caught it, which made it a really nice play on his part.
From what we've been able to see, which has been incredibly limited, is this the first time we've seen, they've shown us Sam with the ones?
That I remember seeing, yes.
Yeah, unless it was back in, like, the first practice or the second practice, honestly, this is the first time.
That doesn't mean that he hasn't taken snaps with the ones when we're not there.
I'd almost guarantee he's taken
plenty of one snaps.
I guarantee
he probably has. But this is the first time we've actually seen it. So just for what people know, they're out there. So when we get in there at 8:30, they're just going through some position drills. They're doing a few things just to kind of get warmed up, get the muscles warm and everything like that. Then they do their stretching and all that. And the first session typically is an 11-on-11 session where they just let the first team offense, first team defense do their thing.
Yeah.
And then they come back the exact opposite way and let the first, second team offense and second team defense do their thing.
Right.
And if, and we, so we don't typically see anything of the third unit. And really, it seems like, and Chris, you made this point early on, it seems like a session to really just get the juices flowing. And that's all it seems to be doing. I don't think we should read anything into what we're seeing.
Yeah, I don't think there's necessarily like a big hurry-up element to it, but it is one of those where you see the coaches kind of barking at them and getting them going and getting guys involved and making sure that they, you know, they're rotating things correct. And this, to me, has a lot to do with as much as trying to make sure that they get those quick packages in, you know, like get a couple of the new linebackers in, get a couple of these. So it's as much on the coaches too, trying to get their packages going together too, because at least what I saw a little bit defensively in terms of just that first session was just it felt like there was a little bit more of a mix between the ones and the twos together than what we had seen maybe in the past. Because at least the first two or three practices, and to my eye, the ones on the offensive and the defensive side seem to be fairly mapped out, and they didn't really change all that much. Now we're starting to see slowly some mixing and matching with the defensive backs, for instance. We're starting to see a couple different permutations with the cornerbacks. Like the first few practices, it was always Meech Powell and it was always Elijah Jackson. Well, now we're seeing Jordan Perryman getting moved in a little bit. We're seeing other times, like I think the first team today, I saw Jacoby Covington was involved. With Elijah Jackson. But so, like I said, they're starting to rotate some things. I think they're trying to get some more combos down on film. So I think they're trying to see what combinations work best for them and how much of an advantage are these guys taking their opportunities when they come.
Running backs, had a chance to talk to Aaron Dumas post-practice. There's still a shortage out there. And, you know, he says, he's getting a lot of reps because it just seems like he's done with one drill. And, boy, you got to turn around and he's ready to do it again. But I think one of the things that jumped out at me about the running back room today was all the guys that were injured were out there today. We haven't seen that a lot in the past. But
I didn't see Caleb Berry, but I saw the others.
Oh, yeah, Caleb Berry did come out later. He wasn't there at the beginning.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Cam Davis was
there.
He was
out there at the end.
I'm pretty sure I saw
Richard Newton was there.
Yeah, Newton was there. I'm pretty sure I saw Adams.
He was wearing yellow.
I didn't see Megua. That's the one guy I haven't seen at all.
We haven't seen Megua, again, that goes back to DeBoer saying, based on the information that they were getting from the trainers and doctors at the beginning, you know, he may be out for spring, and then as it turns out, he was. So don't expect to see him at all.
So Lee Marks, he was the last assistant coach we hadn't talked to.
Yeah.
And so you and I got a few minutes with him, and then I stuck around after you went and talked to another player, I think, involved.
Right.
So
So you heard the comps, the pro comps that he was talking
about. Yeah, that like Jonathan Taylor and he didn't mention Derrick Henry, but that's because that guy's a freak of nature.
That guy's like 6'4", 250 or something. So the first guy that he mentioned in terms of being an all, because basically when I asked what kind of player he's looking for at running back, he basically said you need the Swiss Army knife. You need the guy that can do everything. He
and
needs
who was
to run.
That?
But that's the thing. The guy that he mentioned, old school.
Who would you think?
On the current roster?
No.
In the NFL?
Pro comp.
Yeah, and this NFL, guy is like old Hall school.
Hall of Fame
running back.
Walter Payton.
No.
No.
Marshall Faulk.
Yeah.
So, and a more current guy that he compared it to was
Christian McCaffrey.
And that's kind of what he's looking for. And the thing is, so I talked to Marks after you took off. I talked to Marks a little bit longer, and I asked him, you know, about why they brought Dumas in. He said I recruited him out of high school, and the only reason he didn't get the opportunity to play for us was because we got some other commitments before he was ready to commit, and so that's why when he came on the thing and they looked at the room and they knew they wanted at least one more guy, that's why he brought him in. Right. And then he said the big thing for him with these injured guys, we've mentioned all the injured guys, Camden Sermon's injured, and then Megua, Barry, Davis, Newton. I mean, that's five guys that are out with injuries that would normally be running through running back drills right now. And he said those guys are all getting mental reps. He said he recruited Richard Newton and Cam Davis out of high school and never got the opportunity to recruit them really that much because they had their eyes set more on some Power 5 schools rather than a group of five schools. So he said, I already knew a lot about those guys. They're getting a lot of mental reps. It's easy to teach this offense to these guys, but they have to get out there and get reps. And he said, so they're getting the mental reps, but right now we're not going to be able to they're not going to be able to do anything. So they're just going to have to keep getting those mental reps and put it into practice later on.
Anything post-practice from the interviews that either one of you guys did that really jumped out?
I only talked to Coach Marks. So he was
I talked a little bit to JV on Sunday, and he's, you know, really excited about getting the opportunity because he's getting a lot more reps, you know, as far as the scholarship guys, because it's basically just him and Aaron Dumas right now. So that was fun. Talked a little bit about his child. Which, you know, obviously he's one of the few players on the teams that has as a kid, and so he was beaming at that.
She's got to be almost two now.
Yeah, she's. I think she was born right after he got here.
Yeah.
Talked a little bit about the setback. His freshman year had the surgery to clean things up and getting going, but he is really bought in all on Washington in terms of his future, mm-hmm. and in terms of if he does everything right here, he knows he can get to the league. And that's a huge motivation for him. So I talked to him a little bit. And then, obviously, I think the conversation that you had, Kim, with Roma Dunzi was really good, talking about the limbo of staying or going, the conversations he had with his guys like Jalen Millen, Jalen Polk, those guys, but also the conversation he had with Kalen DeBoer ended up being just as important to him as the one that he ended up having with Jamarcus Shepard in terms of staying. And just the excitement with the offense, thought that was really interesting. So I think we definitely got some good stuff today, really good stuff.
I mentioned this, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, when we had the COVID games, with Romo Dunzi out there throwing the ball, and I'm going, whoa, I mean, the kid can really throw the ball. So Rome admits that he's the best quarterback in the wide receiver room. So
that's a really tough admission, Kim.
Yeah, well, Jalen McMillan says Jalen is, but, also just the way that these wide receivers talk about Coach Shepard, it's always interesting when you ask about Coach Shepard because they just light up. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's Coach Shepard's, you see him on the practice field, he's the same guy in the dining room. So it was interesting that. Talked to Junior Alexander briefly and asked him, what do you want to be called? And he said, call me JR or Junior, and that's fine. He had a real interesting story about Sam Heward being a freshman at Kennedy, so make sure and tune in for that. And who else did I talk to? Aaron Dumas, talked to him. A real bright, articulate kid, and he kind of shared that, by the time
Scott talked about that.
Yeah, yeah. Like Scott said, they ran out of scholarship offers, but he was glad to come up here, and it was kind of a no-brainer. He said he was a smaller back, and I'm going, yeah. You may be small in height, but, I mean, his lower body is put together, and he kind of chuckled at that a little bit. But, it's just one of the things. We've been doing this a long time, Chris, and this is a good group of kids.
Did anyone ask about a comp for him? Does anybody he looks to?
No, I didn't. I didn't ask. I didn't hear it. Okay.
Recruits are what we're going to get into, but we do need to mention that Carson Bruner was on the sidelines today.
Yeah.
And Sermon. He didn't look. I mean, they weren't they weren't in casts, they weren't in anything like that. I don't know how serious stuff like that is. Maybe they just got dinged in practice.
Camden Sermon on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Still a bit of a flashback for me to last year, watching Fatui Tuatele with the scooter, kind of like Zion had to use the scooter last year. So I have no idea if it's a similar injury or something, but at least it's we know it's leg, foot, ankle, something like that.
On Twitter, he says minor setback. So.
Well, it's always a minor setback for the major.
And Eddie
comeback.
Was out there too. Eddie Ulofosio.
Yep.
With Bruner out, Cam Bryant stepped in.
Yep, stepped in. He's long. He's longer than some of these guys.
Yeah. Hopefully, now that we've talked to Aaron Dumas, for instance, I don't remember if it's because Aaron Dumas was here like in January, but because Bryant got here right before camp started, that's the reason why we haven't been able to talk to him. Hoping maybe that opens up next week.
So, well, the thing is, because Junior and Dumas both got here in January.
Right.
Who's the one? So, DeMario King is one we haven't talked to yet, but he's a new guy.
Right.
He was more of a recruit, though, rather than a transfer.
Yeah, and it's the same thing. Even though Brailsford got here fairly early.
Yeah, they won't let us talk to him.
Guarantee you won't talk to him.
We're not going to be talking. Well, I mean, there's really no reason to talk to him.
Well, right, but it's because he's a freshman. Yeah, not because of anything else.
And DeMario King technically is only a sophomore, and he came in as a JUCO guy.
Yeah.
So I think they might hold off on letting us talk to him, but we've got to talk to Perryman. Perryman didn't show up, I don't think, until... the same time Bright didn't.
I don't remember.
So that's he was here for the off-season workouts, that's right. So I mean, Bright may not be available. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah,
and when we talk about the linebackers, you know, so many people, you know, old school people think that, you know, you have, you know, inside linebackers, outside linebackers, and you got three on the field at a time. They don't. Washington only has two linebackers on the
usually,
field at a time.
Usually, yeah. They're only running like two.
Yeah. So. I mean, they're just running two
and
linebackers.
And so it was Tupitala and Bright today.
But the nice thing about it, though, is that because they are wanting to try to find a bigger body, whether it's a Dominique Hampton or a Cam Pepikalanen or down the road like a Tristan Dunn, it will feel like they have another linebacker-type body in there, close to the box or on the line of scrimmage when they're
playing the Husky
back. So, yes, they only have two linebackers in there, but
they don't have a middle line, your quote, middle linebacker like the old days used to.
They do, but he's more versatile.
Yeah.
He's not just a between the tackles
guy. Those guys nowadays have to go sideline to sideline. That's just a requisite. They have to, both of them have to do the Mike and the Will.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Recruits at practice today, Scott?
So the three that we were able to make out were Josiah Wagner, the cornerback from, he's 2023 guy from Spanaway Lake. Jacob Lane, which is a defensive end guy, doesn't have an offer from UW yet that I'm aware of, but he is from Emerald Ridge, and he's gotten a lot of comparisons to Joe Tryon. 6'5", 240 pounds, really can run. I mean, the camp that you and I both went to, the National Preps camp up in Everett, the Everett area, Tulalip, He looked really good there. And then the big name that was here, though, I mean, Josiah Wagner's a big name, but he's an in-state guy.
Yep.
Big name from out-of-state that we could tell was Jaden Moore. He's a defensive end out of the Bay Area, Northern California at least, like, and plays for a smaller school but had like 18 sacks last season. Just a really, really good player. I saw him down at the U of A camp. He told me he was coming up this month, so that it made sense. But he looks completely different the way he was wearing his hair because he had it all pulled back.
Okay.
So before, and so I took a second, and our intern Jack, who it's hard to call him an intern anymore, but
he, fifth-year intern.
Yeah, fifth-year intern. But he said, "Do you think that's this guy?" And he shows me, and I go, "That is him." So, yeah. So, I mean, those were kind of the guys that were on campus that were really worth paying attention to. There was a number of other kids.
Yeah, there. Eastside Catholic had a number of kids.
Is that who it was? Yeah. Eastside Catholic.
Okay. Eastside, Dom Dasty was here.
Yeah, so that was probably the big, tall guy, blonde-haired dude. I think that was either Jacob Hoffman or I don't know his first name, but it's Hoffman. He's a tight end prospect.
And then there's the running back, Henley. I don't know if he was here or not.
Yeah, I don't. So.
Yeah, but Dom Dasty, of course, is the head coach at Eastside Catholic. But Dom's actually slimmed down.
Yeah, he has. He's lost some weight.
He used to be a big old bowling ball.
Those Dom Dasty, Greg Lewis comparisons are going to continue to. Because I remember back in the day when we were doing the Holiday Bowl, I think it was the Jake Locker Holiday Bowl, and Greg Lewis was doing a radio hit with us on KJR. And one of the fans came up to him and asked him if he was Dom Dasty.
I think Greg might be bigger. I'm going to get killed for that.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Dom is slimmed down.
I'm just saying right now they're in the same. And this is a credit to Greg, too, because they're both bigger guys. But I think a lot of fans would get them confused because don't really have a lot of hair anymore. Look, you know, they have that same size, same build.
I'm staying out of this.
I'm telling you what, Dom Dasty was a beast before he got injured.
Absolutely,
he was a beast. Yep, you know,
for
so
sure.
Injuries took
there, and it's great for Dom because he's been at Eastside now for a few years now, so he's starting to build a nice little legacy there, which is nice. Mm-hmm.
Anything else cover? Take us home, Chris.
No, just like I said, I thought we had some really good interviews today. It was really good to talk to Lee Marks and get a great sense because I think one of the things that Washington fans have kind of been wondering about, and we've certainly been wondering about, is the transition in that running back room to the kind of body type that they're looking for. We got a pretty easy answer, pretty straightforward answer in terms of we're trying to find the guys who can do everything. And so I don't necessarily think that precludes any of the bigger backs that they have here. They just have to show that they're as versatile as they need them to be.
Well, these backs are catching a lot of balls out of the backfield, and Cam Davis was that guy. You know.
Well, I watched a lot of that today because I knew that we were going to be talking to offensive players and coaches today. And to be honest with you, I think the Washington fans are going to be really excited about how they're using the tight ends. I think the tight ends are kind of the lost guys in this group because of not only the attrition and guys like Kate Otten going pro and losing Mark Redman and things like that, but just the uncertainty because Fresno State didn't necessarily use a lot of tight ends.
Yeah.
But when they do use them, I think they use them in some highly creative ways. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how a Devin Culp can thrive in this particular offense or a Jack Westover.
In addition to where they're working out, couldn't be any further away from where we're at. They're all usually the opposite end.
Yeah, they're in the corner. That's where they're getting most of their work, yeah.
Yeah. Final thoughts, Scott Eklund?
We're in the middle of that where it's just kind of Kim used to refer to it as a Groundhog Day, where you just kind of see the same drills a lot. I did kind of like one of the, they were doing punt protection, and they were saying, all right, here's the guy. They were kind of pointing out, this is the guy that you need to block, and then but you only do it to a count of like three or whatever it is. And then you got to get in this lane and stay in this lane and don't get blocked out of it.
Yeah.
So it was kind of interesting to watch how they were working on the transition. And then at the beginning of practice when they were just kind of warming up and everything, they had Jalen McMillan and one of the walk-on wide receivers were catching punts from the punters. And Coach Brown was working with the returners, and he would have them sit as they're catching the ball.
Okay.
Because now they had been holding before. They had been
so
holding.
So I'm assuming
tennis
that means
balls.
They're falling backwards.
They're kind of well. They're going just straight down.
Right.
And doing it. But I have to believe, and I made a comment in this in the story, the practice story that I posted, that I said, I can't really tell you why he's having them do that, other than they're doing something relatively unnatural and still having to catch the ball
and
keep focused on that. So I've got to believe it's that. That is why they're doing that.
Yeah, and then I'll point out real quick, Kim, before we wrap this up, there's another drill that I really enjoyed watching, and I think this probably is a drill I'm sure I saw Jimmy Lake run when he was the DB's coach at some point, but it was with the receivers and the DB's, and it was basically like a one-on-one style drill, but without throwing the ball, and it really looked like Juice Brown and Jamarcus Shepherd were trying to get their guys to get to a spot on the field. And it was all about getting that inside shoulder and leverage, or if you were the defensive back, trying to get them out of that lane and get them out of that area. And so they had to do it, and they had to do it with physicality, but without, you know, literally shoving them or doing something that would obviously promote a flag. And so I thought that was a really interesting drill, because it looked like they were trying to do them as much in straight lines as possible. But there was also times where they were asked to maybe run a little curl or run something that was a little different. And sometimes they were going long. So based on whatever the receiver was trying to do, it was up to the DB to like basically reroute them, shut them down, do whatever they could without getting overtly physical. And I thought that was a really interesting drill to watch, because it's basically everything that the battle encapsulates between receivers and DBs, but without the ball. And so I thought that was fun to watch, because it basically really, again, it's a focus drill. It's all about technique, and it's all about getting to that spot.
Last time we did the podcast post-practice, you know, we touched bases on basketball, and then that afternoon Noah Williams went ahead and committed to University of Washington. And this has been in the works for quite some time. It was pretty obvious that, you know.
Did we make it obvious enough for people?
I mean, yeah. Noah's kind of in the doghouse with the Washington State's coaching staff, and that had a big impact on his season. It wasn't any secret that he wasn't going to return to Washington State, and I think, you know, a lot of people in his camp and family and people who know him knew that was going to happen. And, Washington coach has just been waiting for him to enter the portal. And the minute he did, trust me, they were all over him and made him an extremely high priority. I know that they liked his size. I know they liked his length. I know that they thought that, you know, you take a look at what Deshaun Davis did at the top of the zone last year, and they think he can even be better. He's got a nasty streak to him. He does have, I mean, to find basketball players with that nasty streak that can play defense, lock guys down, I know that they're hoping that some of that will rub off on some of the new guys coming in as well as the rest of the team. They want to be bigger, stronger next year. They want to be a tougher team, and, you know, Hopkins is always talked about that. I know a lot of people talking about him not being a shooter. They want him to be a point guard. Now, if you can find a point guard that can shoot the ball and all of that kind of stuff, he's going to be in the NBA before you know it. He's not going to be in the transfer portal. But I think that, you know, with the off year that Noah had last year and then coming into this team, he's going to be hungrier than ever. So had a chance to talk to him, and it didn't make it in the article, but I talked about him. He was a good football player at O'Day. You know, asking about how that rubbed off onto, you know, playing basketball. He said he did. So I think it's a huge get for Washington, being that they still need to get two more bigs. Fardaz Amak, the transfer from Utah Valley State, of course, is going to be the number one priority. But he's still going through the process of getting feedback from the NFL draft, but they're not going to let up on
NBA draft.
NBA draft. They're not going to let up on him at all. And I know that they're after Frank Kapnang as well, the center who's in the transfer portal from Oregon, who's just a big, big, big dude.
I think one thing that you haven't stated was that he's after them too.
Oh yeah, yeah. So,
but I think the long or the short of all this is that, now that Noah Williams is in, I think there's a lot of Washington fans that are like, okay, who's the next in the boat? It's going to happen. Now that that's been settled and they're looking at the bigs, it feels like the particular bigs that they're in on, whether it's Amak or Cottrell or Kapnang, it sounds like those guys might take a little while.
Yeah, sounds like that. I think,
Now, these things can change on a dime. so quickly as they always do in recruiting. I mean, this is, even though it's the portal, this is still recruiting at its bare bones.
It's funny because people want to know what's going on, but as we talk, something can change out there, and then people want to go, well, you said this. Things can change on a dime when it comes into recruiting.
People have no idea how hard it is to predict this stuff.
Yeah. You know, guys that aren't interested in the NIL can all of a sudden be interested in NIL. Guys that are interested in NIL could be disinterested in NIL. Mm-hmm. Things can change so fast and so rapidly in recruiting. So what's true is we're doing this could change by the time we're done and I walk through Heckhead. So,
And like you said, I mean, based on who they talk to on that particular day, their whole recruitment can change. Their priorities can change. A new offer can change everything. You know, it just depends.
So I mean, there is a situation, and God, I hope this doesn't happen to anybody, but where a kid comes in and says, hey, I'm making a basketball decision, not a money decision. And then all of a sudden, their mom gets diagnosed with leukemia or something, you know. I hope that doesn't happen to anybody, because that happened to me right about that age.
Right.
But if it happens, now they are thinking about NIL a little bit more than they ever
would. Well, then they could stop and think that I want to be close to my family as well.
Yeah, so. Exactly. There's so many things that play into all this. It's just so, I mean, doing what I do with NIL now got so much harder, because it's so hard to know what a team is going to prioritize and send out to a kid.
Yeah.
Well, it's made things incredibly hard on our end on that stroke, but on the other end, it's made things incredibly easy if you know the kid and the family situation pretty well. The ability to predict these things in some ways has become a lot easier. Because if what Brandon Huffman says is accurate, and I don't have any reason to believe it isn't, that NIL is still is going to be the primary driver for these recruits moving forward. We can talk about it. Doesn't really matter if it's football or basketball. That if that's going to be the primary driver, then we can talk about it. Based on their situation, their family situation, their home life, the kind of advice they might be getting, who are the people around them and their entourage, what are they thinking, what kind of advice are they giving? There's obviously a lot of factors that go into play there, but I don't think it necessarily is that difficult to figure it out right off the bat how important NIL is going to play in a kid's recruitment. But the one thing that you just talked about, Scott, if there are circumstances, if there are life events, those things can change everything that goes on in a kid's mind literally on a dime.
Yep.
We will be back again on Friday. We get Coach DeBoer on Friday, I believe.
Yep.
You know, so stay
tuned. Scrimmage.
Yeah, big scrimmage, hopefully. Yeah.
Well,
there's a scrimmage on Friday, then there's a scrimmage the following Saturday, and then spring game.
Yeah.
So we should hopefully be talking to Kalen DeBoer on Friday, after they've scrimmaged.
Yeah.
Which we won't get to see.
Yeah, all right. For all of us at Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grinnell, along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.